Good morning again to all of you. I want to greet you in the name of Jesus. It's good to be together again, and I trust you've been blessed and are looking forward to more. As I mentioned yesterday, I'm going to be sharing talks that come from our time in the country of Poland. Some 10 or 11 years ago, we left Poland, came back to the States here, and I've been trying. I'm going to try and give you a few details about the country as we move along. The government of Poland is a democratic government. It had, when we were there, a very favorable opinion of the USA, and as far as I know, that's still true. They have a prime minister, which basically runs the country. They also have a president that is more of a ceremonial role. Public transportation is well established in Poland. It's not like what you all are used to here in the States. Yes, they have cars, lots of cars, but they also have lots of train track. They have 14,563 miles of train track in that country. That was back when we lived there, and I don't suppose it has increased. But you can go almost anywhere you want to go in Poland on the train. And if that doesn't work, then you can take the bus. Lots of buses going here and there. Public schools in Poland start the first Monday in September, and they go until the end of June. This is the standard time frame for public schools in the country. The students in those schools are expected to take a foreign language. Most students will study English, but the degree of mastery varies dramatically. I was a teacher in a public school there for 5 years, teaching English, and it was amazing the variety of levels that the classes had. The Society of Poland is a matriarchal society, which isn't quite what we're used to in our country here, necessarily. The society is a society where the women have the primary influence in the homes. The country of Poland doesn't have any natural barriers on the east and the western sides of the country. And so this has made Poland be a place where attackers from either direction can easily get into the country and destroy the country, and they've had a lot of that in their history. The mountains of Poland are to the south, which in this area, it's a very different culture than, and even a different language dialect than what is in the rest of the country. The title of my message this morning, or my talk this morning, is Communication, the Way to Know and Be Known. The Bible says in Proverbs 25, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in pictures of silver. I wonder this morning how many of you feel like you are a good communicator. You know, you're communicating to me as I look across the audience. There's a lot of communication that flashed forward as I looked at your faces in relation to that question. I don't know if you are or if you're not. But we in Poland experienced that reality very, very profoundly. As I told you yesterday, our mastery of the Polish language was next to nothing when we left the States. And we struggled many, many times to communicate as you would normally communicate. And to illustrate that, I'd like to tell you a story. I don't know how long this was after we had arrived in Poland. I don't remember the time frame, but I remember the incident very, very well. So my wife told me one morning that I needed to go to one of the grocery stores to get some hamburger. Well, in Poland, hamburger's not very easy to find. They don't eat much hamburger. And so it wasn't the easiest thing to do. And I did not know, I don't know why I didn't look this up before I left in the dictionary, but I did not know the Polish word for hamburger. And so I went to a grocery store, and this store was a combination of shelves that you could find what you were looking for, and things that were behind the counter that you couldn't find what you were looking for. You had to ask for it. So I looked around, I walked around this shop and trying to find what I was looking for, and I came to this counter that there was meat under the counter. I could see it under a glass, but I couldn't reach it. But here I am, I wasn't in Poland very long, and I'm trying to figure out how in the world do I find out if that ground meat in there is hamburger. I couldn't tell. I couldn't read the sign. I didn't know what it said. So, you know, when you're desperate to communicate, you resort to some very interesting methods. And so I stood there, and there were several ladies behind the counter. I don't know that they were paying much attention to me, and it's like, what am I going to do? Well, okay, is this hamburger, or is it some other kind of burger? So I finally got their attention, and I said, I knew how to say, is it, in Polish, which is, czy jest, is the way you say that in Polish. So I said, czy jest, and then I didn't know the next word. So I said, moo, 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 and the lady looks at me. And she shook her head. She said, yeah, bok, bok, bok. Oh, how foolish did I feel. But I got my point across. I knew it wasn't hamburger. It was chicken burger. It was chicken that was ground up. You know, communication. It's quite a problem sometimes. And you face that in the classroom from the minute you step in of every day to the minute you leave. And sometimes you even have communication maybe going on outside of the reality of the classroom. You know, we went there and we were looking for a house to live in. We found a house that was big enough, but it wasn't completely finished, and so we had to find some other arrangements for a time. But we met with the owners of that house. It was an older man and his wife. They didn't know any English. None, nothing, no words. We wanted to rent from them. We didn't know hardly any Polish. But you know, we were able to communicate. They did have a son, thank the Lord, that did know English, and so we managed to communicate with him, through him, with his parents. But even as we talked with them about the details of renting that house, we made some comments to them that we were there as a missionary group, and we were probably going to have some meetings in our house, and oh boy, did the radar jumped up real quick. Meetings, what kind of meetings, and who are you, and are you a cult? And they watched us, and they were very worried about having public meetings in the living room of that house for fear we would, I guess, be too rambunctious or something. You know, not a lot of words could go back and forth between us and that older couple, but we communicated to them lots of things. We eventually did move in there, and we learned to know this man and his wife, Henry and Irene. Very lonely people, especially his wife. She was very lonely. And she would, we live right next to them. And so when we came out of the main part of the house where we lived, it was a three-story house, and we lived in the bottom floor and the second floor, and most of the time on the second floor. And we'd come down the steps outside. There was a big stairway there. And it came down the steps, and when you came to the bottom of the steps, you were right at the gate that went into the landlord's place. And she would often sit there waiting for my wife to come down. And when my wife came down, she'd stand up and come over there and start talking to her in Polish, animated, and well, we didn't know what she was saying. But that didn't stop her. She'd talk anyway. Communication. You know, and we struggled to know what kind of communication was going on until about 7 years later, we moved from that house to another house, and then we realized that there had been a lot of communication happening between us and Irene and her husband, Henry. They were very sad to see us move. Even though we didn't sit down and have coffee and talk, because that was very much, we did some as we learned the language more. Communication. Much is being communicated under the surface as well as through the words that you speak. And as teachers, you have to remember that. You might look at a student and smile and say something nice to the question that they ask, But it doesn't take very much of some kind of body language to negate what you just said, because you're communicating. In history, we have known some very great communicators, some to the great benefit of humanity and some to not so much the benefit of humanity. You think of men like Adolf Hitler, Winston Churchill, Ronald Reagan. These men were gifted in being able to communicate. And in their communication, they could move the minds of thousands and thousands of people. You know, you don't have thousands of students in your classroom, but you are a person who is communicating. And I just want that to be underlying of it as I move through this morning, that communication is ongoing. You're communicating with me right now, even though you're not saying a word. I've stood up in front of a lot of groups, and there's other people here that are ordained, and they know what I'm talking about. But you know, as I look at the people that I'm speaking to, there's a lot of thoughts that go through my mind that I'll never tell you as I watch. I'm wondering, what in the world is that? What does that mean? What did that little twitch of the head mean? What are they doing on their lap? And a whole host of other questions, wondering what is going on with this communication that's coming through. So if you think you're sitting there not doing anything that's obvious to me or anybody else that's speaking, you're only fooling yourself. It's not obvious in the sense that we know exactly what's going on, but it's obvious in the sense that something is going on, and your students see that too. When you stand up in front of the classroom for devotions, when they come to your desk and they ask you a question, and maybe without thinking you sigh because this student has been there now for the fifth or the sixth or the seventh time, and they're asking the same question over and over again. I remember a student I had that the dear girl would ask me the same question day after day after day. I got so weary of it. And I'd answer it day after day after day, and it's like, well, tomorrow it'll be the same. I mean, it varied a little bit. It was in a particular subject that she struggled with some, and so it varied some, but I repeated and I explained stuff to that young lady many, many times. And I hope that I communicated to her that I cared as I went through the same thing again and again. You know, we want to be known. We want to know people, and we want to be known. For us in Poland, standing in the way of that desire was this barrier we call communication, this language communication. We couldn't communicate. We weren't sure what to do about it. But as I already indicated with our neighbors, our landlord, we communicated with them even though we didn't talk their language very well. But opposite of that reality was the struggle that we had to know how to communicate effectively. We couldn't go very deep in very many deep discussions. We couldn't get there because we didn't know the language. Can you get into deep discussions with your students? You say, well, I don't know, not too often. Well, maybe you don't know the language. Maybe you haven't thought about the language that you need to communicate some, what shall I say, deep concept to the first and the second graders that you teach. You say, well, how can I go deep with them? Well, you can go as deep as they can go, but if you're talking a language that they don't understand, you're not going to get there, whatever that language might have been. Communication, a very real thing for all of you as teachers. And maybe you struggle because you don't think your communication skills are very good. You don't think you can do it very well. You think they're poorly developed. You know, I've had that struggle many times in my life, and I still have it from time to time as things come through, come past, come over my desk, come through my life. It's like, wow, kind of messed that one up. But you know, if you as an individual want to truly know others well and in a deep way, and if you want others to be able to understand you as a teacher, you're going to have to learn to communicate. You're going to have to think about what it means to communicate. Learn to understand what is necessary for you to do it well. I believe this morning the desire to know and be known resides strongly within all of you sitting here. You want to know others, you want others to know you. Because wrapped up in that desire is the desire for relationship. And if I was to take and strip away all the fluff and all the extras this morning from all of your lives, I think you all would desire relationship. You would all desire to know others, and you want others to know you. Yes, we live in a world where sometimes it's really difficult to allow others to know us. But if you as a teacher want to be successful, you are going to have to be a teacher that your children can know. They need to know you. Well, they might not need to know all the details. I remember coming to school one morning and a young man looked at me and he said, "What were you doing at Walmart last night?" I said, "What?" I had been at Walmart last night. To this day, I don't know how he knew that, but somehow he knew that. You know, they want to know you, and you need to be able to communicate in a way in which they can. Relationships, we want relationships, and these relationships are most effectively built and established and nurtured through the avenue of communication. Paul said, I read this verse yesterday, that I may know him. Job said, I know that my Redeemer liveth. To know something or someone thoroughly and completely, you have to communicate. It can be intentional. It can be unintentional. It can be thorough. It can be not so thorough. But you need to communicate. And knowing comes this morning by communication, both verbally and non-verbally. We really did find that to be true in our Poland experience. The people we learned to know there, we learned to know well, were people with whom we communicated much. There was a lady named Agnieszka that was a very good friend of my wife's, and they got together regularly. This woman could speak English. They were getting together so she could learn English better. And through those regular interactions, they became very close friends. They learned to know each other. Why? Because they communicated. I mentioned to you Irene. Did Laura learn to know Irene as well as Agnieszka? No, she did not, because she didn't communicate as much. Communication, very, very big part of your classroom, something that I want to encourage you this morning to be very much aware of. I wonder if I were to ask you this morning, what are the keys to communication? What would you say? What would you say are keys to be an effective communicator? You think of somebody like Ronald Reagan, Adolf Hitler, Winston Churchill, some of the more recent ones that, you know, what's his name? Jesse Jackson. He's a little more recent than some of these men. I remember hearing him speak one time in person. He was just a few miles down the road here, when he was running for president some years back. The man was a master at communicating. He could hold you spellbound because he knew how to do it. Do you know how to do it? Can you hold your students spellbound? If you can't, it's something you need to learn how to do. And I think there are some keys that are important to this, and I'd like to share some of them with you. I do not claim that this is an exhaustive list, but it's a few things for you to think about. And I'm going to read a passage of Scripture here to begin with, because I think the first key is one of the most important. And I've called that dependence on God. And I'd like to read, I referred to this yesterday, and I'm going to read the passage this morning. Esther chapter 4. I'd like to read the story there where the Jews were threatened. And note some of the things that Esther communicated. Esther chapter 4, starting at verse 5. Then called Esther for Hatak, one of the king's chamberlains, whom he had appointed to attend unto her, and gave him a commandment to Mordecai to know what it was and why it was. I didn't read verse 4, but Mordecai was grieving. He was upset about something, and she found out about that. So Hatak went forth to Mordecai under the street of the city, which was before the king's gate, and Mordecai told him of all that had happened unto him, and of the sum of money that Haman had promised to pay to the king's treasuries for the Jews to destroy them. And he gave him the copy of the writing of the decree that was given at Shushan to destroy them, to show it unto Esther, and to declare it unto her, and to charge her that she should go in unto the king to make supplication unto him, and to make requests before him for her people. And Hatak went, and Hatak came and told Esther the words of Mordecai. Again Esther spake unto Hatak and gave him commandment unto Mordecai, all the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come unto the king into the inner court, who is not called, there is one law of his to put him to death, except such to whom the king shall hold out the golden scepter that he may live. But I have not been called to come in unto the king these 30 days. And they told to Mordecai Esther's words. Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed, and who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Then Esther bade him return unto Mordecai this answer, go, gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens shall fast likewise, and so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded him.
Communication. Mordecai laid it out to Esther. Esther came back with a response. Mordecai, they were back and forth communicating.
And you see that at some point Esther came to a realization that she needed to go in under the king. She needed to communicate to the king what's going on and how she connected to that. The king didn't know she was a Jewish woman. He didn't know that by signing that decree to allow Haman to kill the Jews that he was having his wife killed. I don't know if Mordecai knew that. I suppose he knew the rule that if somebody goes into the king, the king hadn't asked them to come in and the scepter's not held out, that the king's going to kill them. I suppose he knew that. Esther made sure that he did. But Mordecai makes it clear to Esther, you know, if you don't do this, if you don't save your people, you're going to die. And God's going to save the Jews some other way. And I have often wondered what went through Esther's mind as she thought about all of this and she prayed and fasted and wrestled with the reality of the situation. But through it all, at the end of this incident, at the end of this chapter, we see Esther coming to a point of saying, you know what? I'm going to go in. I'm going to depend on God to make sure this works out, however it's going to work out. I will go into the king and I will petition the king for my people. Dependence on God. If you want to be a good communicator, one that is able to communicate well with the children that are sitting in front of you, you had better learn how to depend on God. It's not about your ability to say the things that make the children laugh. It's not about your ability to tell a good story. It's not about your ability to smile when you should smile. It's not about that. It's about your dependence on God. Maybe I could say it's about your communication with God. You had better get that established first if you want to be able to communicate with your children. In your classroom. How well do you communicate with God this morning? When was the last time you talked to Him? When was the last time you let Him talk to you? You say, well, I read my Bible. But did He speak to you? Or did you just read your Bible? I'm not here to say just reading your Bible is a waste of time. But I'm here to encourage you to
Let that be God's message to you. Because he has something to say. He wants to communicate with you. He wants you to learn to be the communicator that you want to be. So one of the keys to your communication in the classroom is your ability to learn to depend on the Lord Jesus Christ in every way. Another key to communication is time. Communication relationship with the children in your classroom. Well, you better take the time for them. When they come to your desk and they ask you a question, you don't need to show them how well you can multitask. While you're scoring something and they're asking you a question and you're trying to answer it and score a book and think about the class that's coming up in 5 minutes. That's not communicating. It's communicating, but it's not communicating what you want it to communicate. You need to take time. Elite, you need to learn to know them. And you want them to learn to know you. Communication, another key to good communication is to find something in common with the person or the people with whom you are talking. We had a lot of different volunteers that came to Poland to serve in our English school that we started there. Different from different backgrounds and different interests. But there was a couple of years where we had the boys that were there. We often would have two boys, two single guys and two single girls. And the boys that were there loved to talk about food. They love to cook. Now, I like food good enough to eat it and to stay alive, but I do not like to cook. And I don't cook. Ask my wife. I can do maybe one or two things. It'll save me from starving, but that's about it. And I am not interested in talking about how to make the latest dish or this or that. And these guys would, and the other family that was there with us, the married guy, he also loved to cook. He loved to be in the kitchen, so they'd get into these long discussions about food. I'm telling you, I got so bored. I'd get depressed almost. It's like, what are we doing now talking about? What's this food? Who cares? Let's talk about something else. We didn't have anything in common in that discussion. I didn't have anything in common with them. And you know, the communication was fairly minimal between me and them on that subject. Find out what you have in common with the students in your room. And don't hesitate to take that and use that as a tool to enhance your communication with them. Trust, another key to good communication. The Polish people are a suspicious people. It was very, very hard to get them to trust us. They would hold you at arm's length for a long, long, long time. They wouldn't come to our services. Why? Because they didn't trust us. Along with that, they knew if they came to one of our meetings, they would have to go to the priest the next week and confess that they came to our meetings, and they didn't want to do that. But as we invested time in the lives of these people through English lessons and just interaction, you could see that suspicion slowly drain away. But there was time invested. There was communication going on. We were learning to know them. They were learning to know us. They realized we weren't quite as strange as they thought we were. When we got jobs in the public school and taught there, they realized that we were common like them. We weren't just missionaries from the States that were getting paid to live there and didn't have to live like they lived. Yes, we did receive funds from the States, even though we worked. But when we worked in the classroom in the public school, you could see it right away. When we told them before we did that, well, we're here as missionaries and now we don't have a job, they'd kind of look at, well, that's not normal. But as soon as we could tell them, yes, we're teaching in your public school, barriers would come down and communication would be able to be more effective. Because they realized that they could maybe trust us. I remember one of my jobs was as the as the field director, was to do a lot of work at the immigration office, getting paperwork together for my family and the singles that were there. So I made many trips to the immigration office, to the work office. And going to the work office was a terror, because they didn't treat you very nicely there. They couldn't speak English. They didn't care that they couldn't speak English, and you had to speak Polish. It's kind of like me, like I told you yesterday, when the cop said, came to my window, I said, "Hi, how are you?" I let him worry about how to communicate with me. In that situation, they let me worry about how to communicate with them. And I couldn't do it very well. In fact, I took a Polish person with me for the first 4 or 5 years, because I just couldn't. And they were impatient, and it was extremely stressful to go to the work office. But one time I was there, I discovered a lady, and I forget her name, but I discovered a lady who was much more patient. And it was the situation where you went in and kind of got a number, and whoever became free and your number was next, you'd get them. So you never knew who you were going to get. But she helped one time, and she was very kind. She didn't know English, as I recall, but she was very kind. She was very helpful. She wasn't nearly as aggressive as the rest of them. And I would pray, before I had to go there, "Please, let me get this woman." I think her name was Monica, but I can't remember for sure. And sometimes I would, and sometimes I would not. But as I got her enough that she learned to know a little bit who I was, and there was a bit of trust that was begun to be established. And I'm telling you, when that happened, communication could happen. I could actually talk to her, and she would hear, and she would understand me. She would talk to me, and she would slow down a bit, and I could understand her, and we could get somewhere. Because she began to trust me, and I began to trust her. It's a powerful thing. If you want to communicate, live in such a way that the students can trust you. You know, I mentioned something in common along with that. You know, if you're trying to communicate something, come up with something that catches the interest of the people that you're trying to communicate with. I taught in our private school that we started there, I taught a group of beginning students. They were older people. They weren't children or teenagers. But they couldn't speak English hardly at all. And so we were really down low in the level of English. But I was teaching them that year, and they were the group that I had when my wife's brother was in his accident back in 2005, I guess, and his children were killed, all five of them. And I had a lesson with them. Was it the next day? I can't remember for sure, but it was shortly thereafter. And remember, these people you can't carry a conversation on with them. But I was able to communicate to them something about what happened. And man, their interest perked up right away. They just could not imagine something like that. And I was able to teach them, to communicate with them, because I had gathered something, I had brought something to the lesson that, you know, they found interest in. It was such a tragedy that they were interested. They couldn't imagine a family, a dad losing five children in one car accident, which none of us hardly can. But it caught their interest. And that lesson was probably as... they probably learned more of that lesson than they learned in any of the other ones. Communication. It needs to be honest communication, but honesty tempered by consideration. Yes, we need to tell the truth. But remember, when you tell the truth, remember what Paul says in Ephesians 4. "And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. But be ye kind one to another." You need to learn how to communicate the truth to your students with kindness. Not with, "I got you this time, don't let that happen again." Not with, "Why did you do that? Why didn't you think?" You know, however you may come through, make sure that as you communicate, it's done in honesty, but with consideration. Be available. If you want to learn to be a good communicator, be available. Get to your classroom early enough so that if a student comes early, You might be busy trying to get things ready to go for that day, and they walk up to your desk with their math book. You say, oh boy, I don't have time to help this student with this math lesson. Especially if it was the same student that came yesterday with the math book about the math lesson. Be available. I had a private lessons with a man who became a friend of mine there in Poland. His name was Peter, or Piotr. And I went to his shop, and we had an hour of conversation. And I walked in there one day, and he was sitting there. I knew right away. He started talking a little bit. His English was broken, but we could communicate in English. He started talking, and I knew right away something was wrong. We talked about different things, and finally I looked at him and I said, Peter, what's wrong? And he said, I don't remember his friend's name, but he said, my friend committed suicide last night. And he didn't know what to do with that. Now, you're not going to run into anything that extreme in your classroom, I am sure. But the point I'm trying to make is, be available. We sat there and were able to talk about that. Peter's not a believer, was not a believer. As far as I know, he's not a believer. I haven't had contact with him for 10, 12 years. I don't know where he's at now. But be available if you want to learn to be a good communicator. Be a person of encouragement. This is another key to communication. How well can you communicate? Well, yes, you can communicate when you walk up to a student's desk and you begin to correct and maybe criticize what they just did. You maybe reprimand. Yes, I suppose you can communicate, but how effective is that? I think it's a whole lot more effective if you can walk up to a student's desk and you can encourage them in what they just did. We would walk into a shop there in Poland and we would say, Dzień dobry, to the lady at the cash register. Her face would light up. She'd say, Dzień dobry, and off she'd go in some Polish. And we're like, wait. We didn't want to go any further than that. But you know, as soon as they heard us say something in Polish, they were impressed. They said we had different ones tell us that They would have met with Americans before who never would try to speak their language. And they couldn't figure out what these people were doing trying to talk their language. And all they would do would encourage. You know, just, yeah. You know, I remember preaching in Polish and those people listening, I don't know what they heard sometimes, but they would always encourage me to do it. Yeah, you're doing fine. We understand what you're saying. Just keep doing it. Keep talking in Polish. I don't think they did understand sometimes, but they would always say that because they were delighted that I was attempting to communicate with them in their language. Another key to communication is having a need or a desire. You know, you've all watched children. Some of you have children. Some of you do not. Maybe you have siblings that are young. But as a little child who can't speak, can they communicate? They absolutely can. I have two little granddaughters, and it's just fascinating to watch them communicate what they want to their mom and dad. Sometimes I can't figure it out, but mom and dad usually can. And they don't say anything legible. They don't say much of anything understandable, but through pointing and grunting and squawking and I don't know what all, pretty soon mom knows what they want because this child has a need. Communication. If you don't have a need, if you don't have a desire, communication is going to be difficult. Now, just for a few minutes, let's consider the other side of the coin. What are some barriers to communication? What are some things that are going to make it hard for you to communicate? Well, you know, speaking another language. And that can be, of course, another physical language, as I've referred to in the situation in Poland there. Speaking English versus speaking Polish. But sometimes we even have a hard time communicating when we speak the same language, is it not? Again, those of you that are married know what I'm talking about when you try to say something to your spouse and they come back with, "So you said this," and you say, "No, I didn't say that. That's not what I meant. That's not what I said." "Yes, that's what you said." "No, no, you've been down that road, right?" Well, what's the problem? We're all speaking English, but there's maybe a different language coming through in that English. And so you need to be aware of that with the children that you speak. You may get up and try to say something very plain, and to you it makes all the sense in the world. And it's very clear, and there's absolutely no way that anybody could misunderstand it. Well, don't kid yourself. You've probably got 10 or 12 or 15 children sitting in there that maybe misunderstood it. You know? Be careful about the problem of speaking another language. And don't let that just be another language, as in English, Polish, Spanish, Greek, Latin, whatever other language you want to put in there. Don't let it just be there, but consider the reality of speaking another language and how it's perceived when the language is the same language that you speak physically. Another barrier to communication is not being on the same page. You know, and that can be illustrated by one generation's inability to communicate with another generation. Seeing things through different glasses. Seeing things from different perspectives. This hinders communication when you're not on the same page. And maybe this is more of something to consider for you as teachers as you're thinking of people that you're teaching with, or the school board that you're working with, or the parents that you're working with. Communication is going to be difficult, going to be impossible if you can't get on the same page, as it were, with them. Another barrier to communication is the idea that if we withhold information so that everything can be peaceful, this is an aid to communication. Well, that was a tough one for me to relate to, because I can imagine that it could be. But from my experience in life, it's not necessarily a good approach. You say, "Well, should I say everything that I know?" Well, maybe not. But just don't kid yourself that not saying something so that there is peace is a method of communication, is a method of good communication, I will say. I'll let you think about that a little bit. I think I'll take you back to what I said before in Ephesians 4:32, and be ye kind one to another. Be kind as you determine how to deal with the reality of knowing what to say and when to say it. Another barrier to communication is, "I don't need you." If I don't need you, then what you have to say doesn't open the door for anything to be said. Events in the past can be barriers to communication. I had a student, his name was Jacek, which is Jack in Polish, or in English, and he had a very broken past. His home was a mess. He was not married when I knew him. He's married now. The communication with him about the things that I valued, you know, based upon what I had, my family life and how I had been taught, was extremely difficult because he couldn't connect. He didn't know what I was talking about. I remember him saying, I encouraged him to serve God. He became a Christian, and I encouraged him to be faithful in serving God and to establish the things in his life that need to be established so that he has something to give to his children when he gets married. And he looked at me, and I talked to him about some of the things that, you know, in my upbringing. And he looked at me and he said, "John, I don't have anything like that. I don't have anything to give to anybody else." I said, "Jacek, you can begin." I don't know where he's at in that. I hope to see him here in a week or two and find out what's going on in his life. Another barrier is arrogance. False humility, misunderstanding, lack of unity. What do you do with a student that hears you say one thing and hears the principal say something else about the same topic? That's a barrier to effective communication. Another barrier is an agenda when you're talking, or the suspicion of an agenda. We had an older man who wanted us to come to Poland, and he came to our services for years. He's not living anymore. But he always seemed to have an agenda. He wanted a church to be started there, and we started a church there, but he would never join it. He never joined the church. He would never take that step. And he would always look at us. He was a very wise man, a good friend, but he would always look at us with suspicion. Always come to us with, he would come to us with comments, and we were never sure quite where he was headed. And communication was difficult. Fear is another barrier to communication. And maybe that's something that in the classroom you'll struggle with as much as any of these. People won't understand. I can't say it right. Don't know where this is going to end up. It's going to get out of my control. I can't talk about that. I just can't do that. Fear. Fear is something that we cannot let control. The communication that must be in our lives. What are some benefits to communication? Is clear, open, and honest communication really that necessary? Well, maybe. I think it is. Or you'll end up in a situation that was in a particular church where after there was not as much communication as there should have been, many of the people begin to feel a sense of frustration. And one person put it like this: we don't know what really matters anymore. You know what? You don't ever want your classroom to get to that point where your children sitting there saying, we're not sure what matters anymore. If they don't know what matters anymore, then you'd better get on your knees and ask God to help you figure out how to communicate to them what does. Communication enables the listener to learn. It enables the listener to extend empathy. It enables the listener to understand. It enables the listener to respond. It enables the speaker to share what's on their mind, to invest his thoughts in the lives of others, to expand the knowledge of those listening, to give respect to those listening. It enables the speaker to open themselves up for input. This morning, when there is communication going on, well thought out, well developed, intentional communication, there's some good results that happen. You begin to have a vision. A vision is going to be developed for you and your school and your classroom. Energy is renewed for those that are lagging. Encouragement is received for those that are struggling. Knowledge is enlarged. Action is inspired. And finally, relationship is developed. This morning, I want to encourage you to develop your skills in communication with other people, because in the classroom, you work with people. But even more than developing those skills in the classroom with other people, may you take the time to develop your communication with your Heavenly Father. Because again, you need to know Him. If you want to know Him, you have to communicate with Him. And He has to communicate with you through prayer, Bible reading, meditation on the Scripture, communication with other believers. Focus on knowing God, and upon that basis, you will be able to know others and allow yourself to be known of others. Communication can be a terrifying thing. And I could give you lots of illustrations, but I'm out of time. But it doesn't need to be a terrifying thing. It can also be a blessed thing. Communication is a word that is able to bring a grimace of terror or a smile of delight to the face of anyone who hears it. How would you rate your communication this morning, your ability to communicate? Are you satisfied with how you do it? Or are you just one that wants to throw your hands in the air and say, I just can't. I've made so many mistakes. I'm not even going to try. What I am is what I am, and people are just going to have to live with it. That's a horrible approach. You should never say that. Because There's a little tiny element of truth to that, but you have so much potential to become a person that people can know. You have so much potential to learn to know others that you don't have to be frustrated with your ability or your inability to communicate. As I mentioned earlier, I have struggled with this in my own life. Some years ago, I was in Poland as a field director, and there were things that always go well there, and there were problems, and I got a little burned out. And I got to the point where I said, I'll just take a back seat. I'll just take a quiet. I'll just step back here. I won't talk. I won't be involved. I won't take the chance of being misunderstood. But that was not a good approach. It severely crippled my ability to be the field director there. We came back to Oregon, and I became a part of this church right here. I loved it. I didn't have any responsibility. I could listen and observe, learn, and I didn't have to worry about communication that much. But then I was ordained in 2015. And not long before that ordination, I remember I was involved in an email conversation with some other men on a board that I was on. We were talking about something. I don't remember anymore what it was, and I took the opportunity to write down what I thought about it. Well, I guess I wrote too much. I did. I didn't think carefully about what I wrote in my manner of communication, that being my manner of communication. And it wasn't long after I sent the email that one of the men on the committee or on the board wrote back to me and chided me for what I had written. He told me some of the things he felt I was communicating, and I grimaced. I really did. It was not a good experience. It's not what I meant. I didn't have that agenda that he thought I did. I was only trying to be open and clear. And you know, I struggled right then with the desire to, as I put it, pull back into a hole and cover the entrance syndrome. What should I do? Apparently, my communication skills back in that day were still pretty raw and undeveloped. And I kind of passed it off. But then not long after that, I was chosen. I was ordained to the ministry. I was chosen to be in the lot. I remember that. And I remember very clearly one night, wrestling with the reality of communication. I argued with God and I told him I can never be a minister. I can't communicate. And as a case in point, I went back to that email. I said, God, look what happened. Look what I did. But eventually God managed to convince me that it wasn't just about that one event. And I was chosen. But it has been it's been an ongoing journey for me to learn how to communicate. The morning after, I was on my way to work. Just what direction is it? I guess it's this direction. Headed that we live not far from here at that point. And I remember, shouting, I don't remember if I shouted, but I talked out loud. I was by myself, and so I didn't have to worry about anybody hearing me. And I did. I questioned God. I said, God, what are you doing? It's not going to work. This was after the fact. And to this day, I'm not sure if it's going to work, but God has said we need to learn how to communicate, and that's my desire. And I'm working on that continually. I'm not a perfect communicator. Ask my wife. It's not always so good sometimes. But we can be. I want to know others, and I want to be known of them. And I trust that's your goal as well. And if that is your goal, God will bless you in your classroom this year and every year that you find yourself there. Thank you.